On today's episode of The Thriller Zone, Robert Crace and Racing the Light. Hello and welcome to The Thriller Zone. I'm your host, David Temple. And on today's show, as we are well into our way along November, is a guy who knows a thing or two about writing. Oh my goodness. If I throw some names at you, like, well, let's just do one. Raymond Chandler. Yeah, it's not actually Raymond. He's not on the show today. But a guy who writes, who kind of channels him, is Robert Crace. And the book is Racing the Light. I raced through this thriller at the speed of light. Stop my silliness and let's get on to the show. Robert is with us right here on The Thriller Zone. You look great.
Good, thanks. So do you.
Well, I thank you. I even did a little background to match the delicious cover of your book. Look at that.
Perfect.
You know, it's a little attention to details, Robert.
Yeah, I know. Details make the man.
Sounds like a line out of Mad Men.
Yep.
So we have 25 minutes today, yes?
Yes, sir. That appears to be it.
All right. Then I won't waste any time, but I'll start by saying welcome to The Thriller Zone.
David, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you for following me on Twitter. I saw that you joined the gang recently.
I did. I'm now part of the David Temple horde.
With the D. So listen, I just want to cut out of the, we're going to get to this right away, but I want to get to know you because I'm very enamored and a little, you know, I'm in awe because you're a friggin' rock star. And what I loved about this book is it's so clear that you spent many years doing TV scripts because, you know, Hill Street Blues, Miami Vice, LA Law, because that dialogue and that witty repartee is delicious.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I think of my TV years as my writing school. I mean, I was a baby writer when I got involved in television. And listen, you just rattled off the names. I was super fortunate to work with some really talented people at really terrific shows. You know, Hill Street Blues, Cagney and Lacey, all those things. God. So I learned an enormous amount. I mean, listen, when I got involved in TV, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
Right. I was a guy who could kind of tell a story and that's why I got hired. But everything I learned about, you know, dialogue, about editing, about pace, you know, scene transitions, the importance of moving, you know, having one scene snowball into another, propel into another, push into another. All of those lessons I learned. I think when I began writing books, that's naturally then just how I did it.
Sure.
So I think it was a great boon. It was a real help to my fiction writing.
Well, it's the personification of making every word count, which was it Elmore Leonard who said, cut out the words that nobody pay attention to, or, you know, it doesn't matter.
Mr. Leonard said, leave out the stuff people don't read.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely right. I'm a believer in that. You know, I'm a big reviser, I revise constantly and I edit constantly. And invariably what I'm doing is I'm cutting things out. I don't want too many words.
Yeah.
I think it's better to be direct and clear. Clarity is very, very important.
Well, there's a couple of things. My wife saw me reading this, which, by the way, now I think I've set a record as having read, this is the fastest I've ever read a book. And we're going to get to that in a second. I mean, I one sitting, it was done.
Yo, you skipped every other word?
Dude, there were no words to skip. That's the point. The dialogue and the pages move faster than any book I've read. And I just celebrated 100 episodes a couple of days ago with Andrew Child. And I looked at this and I'm like, I've never read a book that fast. So anyway, my wife sees me reading it and she goes, is it good? I'm like, yeah. Excuse me. Here are the mowers. Really? Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. So I said, yeah, it's good. I said, she goes, okay, how? I said, well, imagine Raymond Chandler was living in Laurel Canyon today. I mean, I know that sounds a little bit of smoke up your skirt, but I mean, that's what I mean.
Wait, Putnam, send him the check, please. No, I get it. Look, I mean, Los Angeles has a storied history with detective fiction and crime fiction. Raymond Chandler was my gateway drug to this whole universe. When I discovered Chandler, I fell in love with Los Angeles. It literally was a gateway. It opened the horizon to all the other crime writers who were at play and working. And my love of that fiction led me to come out here and eventually led me to become, you know, the novelist I am today.
Where's the pipe? Here's the thing. I love the fact that we both share a love of amateur filmmaking. And what I want to know is, and I read this somewhere in one of your bios on one of your press pieces or something. I said, it says, Robert, Bob, just picked up and moved to Hollywood where you quickly, and the word quickly jumped out at me, found work writing scripts for TV shows. So we're gonna go take one step back. How did that, like anything happens quickly in Hollywood, how did that happen? And did it really just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go to Hollywood and bam.
Yeah. I mean, I was writing short stories in Louisiana. I'd been writing ever since I was, junior high, scores and scores of short stories. And finally, I sold one and then I sold another and I sold another. And for the first time, really, you know, those $50 checks were proof. At least they were evidence that I had something going on writing wise. I very much wanted to be a professional writer. You know, I didn't want to have to work a real job. So I thought, if I wanted to do this, maybe Hollywood was the way to go because, you know, TV writers, movie writers, you can make a living doing it.
Yeah.
You can't make a living writing short stories. So, I just came out here. A couple of friends of mine, they wanted to come out here too. So we moved out. I didn't know anyone in the business. I had no connections. I had never seen a teleplay or screenplay. So I educated myself how to do it and simply by, going to bookstores around Hollywood, they'd have, like used scripts that the studios had, that someone had stolen from the studios and right. Now they sell them for $2. Right. I bought a handful of those things and measured them and saw what they looked like. Oh, look, the dialogue is narrow. And then this other stuff is, you know, wider and started writing scripts and, you know, I found an agent the old fashioned way. The guild used to, you'd have to pay a buck or something, but they'd give you a list of agents who had signed, the minimum basic agreement, which is the working agreement with the Writers Guild of America West. People I had met out here began to say, oh, you should call that guy. Oh, you should call that guy. I just started cold calling guys. Hi, you know, I'm Robert from Louisiana. I've sold, you know, half a dozen short stories. Would you like to read my script? And I submitted them and you know, I found a guy I trusted who was willing to represent me. And he started submitting them. And then, they sold. One of them sold.
So. Holy moly. And not just... So then you take that prolific career and what, maybe a decade or so later say, I'm going to go long form. And then you proceed to spend nearly two decades just cranking out hit after hit. I mean,
well, man. I when I got involved in the TV, no one could have been happier. I mean, it was exciting. It was terrific. And I didn't know anything. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing, but I had the good fortune of working with a lot of terrific people, very, very talented writers, producers, actors. I look at television now as my, my writer school, you know, Writer University, AKA Hollywood.
Yeah.
And the lessons I learned, I think we're enormously valuable. You know, dialogue, pacing, you know, how to edit, how to transition from scene to scene, you know, story structure to propel a story forward, you know, how to reveal the truth of a scene through dialogue, and, you know, on and on. So when it was time, when I felt it was a time for me to write novels, everything I'd learned in television was at play there. And I was always a visual thinker anyway. My work was always visual, even in the short story days. So I think that natural bit carried over into the books. You know, I think the books are very visual. Hopefully. I think all of those elements helped to lead to the success of the novels.
Yeah. Well, you know, back to the sparseness, the brevity of the descriptions, when you read your work, and I think this is the first one I've read in a long time, let's put it that way. So I was refreshed to it. When you read your work, you realize, back to an earlier comment I made, that when you strip out a lot of the description and the extraneous things, which we often think as writers, oh, this will be cool because I really paint these pictures. But you can paint the picture in a sentence this small, still get the same thing across, because really what I love more than anything is the dialogue and just making me go, let me just jump into the scene early and get, you know, late and get out early. Love that.
Look, for me, every word on the page is a brushstroke. I'm trying to evoke certain feelings on the page. Right, whatever the scene is, whether I'm writing a narrative description or dialogue, I'm looking for a certain effect. I find that effect helps paint the image of Elvis Cole's Los Angeles and all the characters within it, including Elvis Cole, in a certain way, with a certain vibe. With a certain degree of emotional content. Too many words improperly used feels like flab to me. So when I'm revising, and I revise a lot, I'm constantly cutting. And what's left may be the bare minimum or close to it. But it's created a feel for the world that I'm trying to create, hopefully in the reader.
To step back and look at maybe a 30,000 view, if you had to narrow it down to a singular thing, Robert, what would you say? And you've had so many wonderful accolades along the way. What is a pinnacle of your career to date that you just go, man, this is that moment where I'm like, yeah, I could die right here.
Oh man, I don't even feel anywhere close to that. There's so much more I want to do. You know, this is my 23rd novel, 19th Elvis Cole novel. Ask me that when I get to book 60.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I'm already halfway through the next book that I'm writing. I have multiple ideas for books after that. There's standalone books I want to write. There are a lot of mountains to climb before I can call it quits.
Yeah. And that's another great question. You know, so many people are encouraged, especially early on in a career, to develop a series because it makes sense. You get your listener, your viewers that way. They pull them in and they stick with you. But the standalones, some people can shoot out of the gate with a bunch of standalones, others can't. You, now at your illustrious career, can easily just pop in and do standalones all you want. So do you see that as one of those blessings of being in the place that you are?
Well, maybe, you know, but I do the standalones because, you know, those are characters I really want to write about.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm working on a couple of standalone ideas now that won't be the next book or the book after that, I think, but maybe the third and fourth books from now will be a couple of standalones. Putnam's been super supportive in and me doing my standalones and so my readers. I mean, I know there are readers who like they'll only read the Elvis Cole novels, you know,
yeah.
And they may or may not pick up a standalone because heaven forbid it's not Elvis Cole.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this: a few years ago, I wrote a book called Suspect about an LAPD canine officer, Scott James, and his canine dog, German Shepherd named Maggie, who had been in the Marines. You know, she had been a military working dog before she was on LAPD. You know, I wrote it because I loved the characters and I wanted to tell Maggie's story. But I never expected this, but up to that date, it was like the biggest selling book I had.
Wow.
You know, so I don't look at any of this stuff as, you know, it was funny. I said, Bill's, and it was the biggest selling book I had to that date. Friends would say, man, Chris, you're really smart. You wrote a book about a dog. Look, and I said, wait a minute. You think this was smart? Okay, if I was that smart, like a dog book's going to take off, I would have wrote that 20 years ago.
Right, right.
Why wait? It has nothing to do with that. You write these books because you love them. I write Elvis Cole novels because I want to read Elvis Cole novels. I love being in Elvis Cole's world. I love Joe Pike, all those people. But the standalones I love too. So it's a different, it's a break for me for one thing. It's funny. It's fun and refreshing to see the world, through other characters, you know, for the year I spend writing these things.
Sure.
It's energizing in many ways. So that's a good plus to it.
And it's about a book a year, right? Is that's about?
Well, I'm slower than that. If you average it out, I think it probably comes to a book every 18 or 19 months over time. You know, it's been 3 years since my last book, so this has been a big break for me.
Well, so happy birthday! It drops Tuesday. So this little baby right here, Racing the Light, drops Tuesday. Good. Robert, I got a pretty good idea through reading this what the title means, but can you share with my listeners? The story behind the title?
There are layers to the meaning behind it, depending upon the character in the book. But basically, the light is the truth behind the lie, and it's always out on the horizon. And the only way to learn the truth is to catch the light. So you have to race the light and catch up with it. And that's what the characters in the book are doing or trying to do.
So good. So good. Well, I love the book. It has so much to look forward to in a thriller. And I suppose one of the best things, as you've already said, and anyone who reads your work knows this, testament to your success, that relationship between Cole and Pike. And again, the relationship is deep, yet as minimal in its construct as the dialogue itself, which I kind of dig. That, you know, when you have a best friend, we've all had them, you can hang out and say very little and be able to transfer a lot of different thoughts with very few words. So I'm a big fan of that as well.
Good. Terrific. I'm glad. Thank you.
If you were to do, going back to screenplay writing, and anyone who knows what a log line is, it's kind of that one singular thought of what a book or a movie is. If you were crafting a log line for Racing the Light, what would it be?
Reading this book will extend your life by 50 years.
That's perfect. I got to buy that book. Oh, that's brilliant.
That one's just for you, David.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll find out Robert's least and favorite things about Hollywood, as well as that all-important question, what's your best piece of writing advice? It's still to come on The Thriller Zone. Stay with us.
The best thrillers, your favorite authors, The Thriller Zone.
But as we start to wrap, a couple of Hollywood questions. I did three tours of duty in Hollywood, so I've got a a very special place in my heart for it. Do you miss screenwriting? Do you miss that particular, very specific exercise?
No. I love this.
Yeah.
I love writing books.
Yeah.
I love writing books. I don't want to go back.
All right. So I know you love living in Hollywood and you've been there a while. What's your least and favorite things about Hollywood? Everyone's got one favorite and one least favorite.
Well, my least favorite thing of living here is the traffic.
Ding.
Yeah. Right. I could do without the traffic. I mean, where's my jetpack? I want that jetpack.
Right.
My favorite thing, honestly, is the diversity of the landscape.
Yeah.
I love, they claim the official numbers, something like, I don't know, 6 million people here. I think it's probably upwards of 8 million or more. With this great, flat, sprawling city, within it, we have mountains, we have canyons, which are undeveloped, and state parks, city park zones. We have wildlife. We have an enormous cultural diversity, and all of these things add to the pleasure of living here. You know, we can get my car right now and drive 20 minutes and visit little Ethiopia and little Armenia and yeah. K-Town and Chinatown and Thai Town and on and on and on and on and on, and get great food, man, from every culture on the planet. It's that presence here which is magic.
Yeah. I would agree. And you've also got Pink's. So when you have one of those late night moments.
Yeah, when you just got to have a chili dog, you go there.
Yeah. All right. Now, here's since you started out kind of dabbling in films, I have to ask, as a mutual film lover and filmmaker, would you ever be interested in being at the helm? Here's the magic of the question. Being at the helm of turning one of your books into a film.
No.
No.
No, my book Hostage was made into a film. My standalone, historically, I've never sold the rights to Elvis Cole, the film rights to Elvis Cole. My standalone books, I felt differently about, and I've sold or optioned the film rights to all of the standalone books. And only one film has been made. I wrote screenplays for a couple of those books, didn't enjoy the process. So I don't have any interest in that. As I said, I've systematically said no. There've been gazillions of offers for the film rights to Elvis and Joe and the books, the Elvis Cole books. But really for the first time, in the past couple of years, I've begun to consider some. I'm not sure that I'm going to do it yet.
Yeah.
But I'm maybe thinking we're in an era now where it might feel appropriate. It might be time to let someone else, not me, to let someone else bring Elvis Cole to the screen. I think I'm open to considering that. And this is a first because I've always automatically said no in the past.
Well, I, for one, would be a huge fan of that because I think it's especially in this world of streaming, I think he would be one of those guys that could hang out for decades to come. And, you know, I hope this is a compliment because one of my favorite characters of television was Jim Rockford from the Rockford Files. Yeah. And I loved that. He had that a similar sense of humor, and you know he was a tough guy and a guy's guy, and the stories were neatly and concisely told each week, and I thought, man, this is where, you know, Cole and Pike would just make for great episodic, man.
I agree. I love Rockford. You know, Steve Cannell, Juanita Bartlett, and of course the great James Garner.
Oh yeah,
it simply didn't get any better than the Rockford Files. Well. We'll see how that plays out.
Well, I hope so. As we get ready to wrap, I want to say I really had hoped to meet you in person. Down, you're going to be at Warwick's next week down in La Jolla, which is right here in my backyard. But I'm going to be out of town, dead gummit, because I wanted to shake your hand. And so I'll have to catch you next time.
Another time, David. We'll do it.
All right. And as we wrap, I always wrap with one final question, and especially of prolific authors as yourself. What will you leave for my listeners, my viewers, that best piece of writing advice to aspiring novelists?
Write what you believe. Write the book that you want to read. Don't write the book that you think, oh, this they're buying this now, so this will be easy to sell. I don't think that works, or at least it doesn't work to any extent. My philosophy for myself has always been write the book you want to read. And I think that's the best advice I could give.
Awesome. Well, folks, if you'd like to learn more, visit robertcrace.com, and you can follow him on social as I do. And the book is Racing the Light. It's a hell of a read, fastest read I have had this year, and just dynamite. Thank you so much, Robert, for taking time out and hanging out with me.
David, thank you. It's been a lot of fun, man. Let's do it again.
All right.
Great.
Short and sweet, but awfully neat. Robert Crace is on the show and Racing the Light. Wasn't that a great interview? Boy, I could have talked to him a lot longer, but we were on a very tight schedule. Maybe another time, his next book, perhaps. And wouldn't you like to see some of that material turned into television streaming? Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. All right, I've got some reading to do, so I'm going to scoot on out of here. David Temple, your host. I'll see you next time for another exciting edition of The Thriller Zone.